You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. To you, I'm Mike McNamara for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning, wherever you are. A lot of stuff in the news over the weekend. I got a chance to catch up on some sleep, which I did, and mowed my backyard, which I needed to do. Yeah, which I've been neglecting, and it made me feel good. When I looked around after I had mowed and weeded a little bit, I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. That's what this thing's supposed to look like. Not the craziness, the winter craziness that had ensued. So anyway, life in my backyard, getting back to normal. The other thing, baseball, I got a chance to go watch spring training in Florida for the first time in my life. Had seen it, had heard about it, grew up around it, but never got to see it. And anyway, largely unimpressed with Florida, I got to tell you. It's a swamp. It's a con job, man. I could see the bugs already. Could feel the humidity. Water everywhere, pools of it. Yep. Not going to lie to you. It was everywhere. But, no, I'm still not over my trip to Orlando. The reaction, again, still not over that. And so if you missed the show last Friday, you should listen to it. Hour one in particular was kind of my reaction about what I experienced. And I'd never given post-traumatic winning to a group of women that large. And the reaction was unbelievable, to be honest with you. So, taught me a lesson. So, I have to find a way to broaden the reach. And there's people that will help me. And so, very interested in doing that. And so, that's exciting. So, good Monday morning. Because of the Afghan peace deal, Jeff Kenney, Tim Lynch going to join me today, and we're going to talk about that, right? John Bolton tweeted that this is an Obama-esque peace deal. You'll hear from Jack Keane here in the first hour, something I recorded from him, and then as he was on, I think he's on Fox News yesterday, and big fan of General Keane, and he has big concerns relative to this deal. And so I would tell you that to me, it's the President of the United States said he was getting out of Afghanistan. He's going to wind that thing down come hell or high water. So it will take a pretty sizable event to keep us in there. Now, I think a lot of people, including myself, have mixed feelings about, you know, about all of this, right? And so, but I think even the hardliners, right? When you think about Afghanistan, you go back to the original OPT that said, we're going to expand the ground war here. We're going to stay and expand the ground war here. And, you know, I hate to use the term fool's errand, but again, as I consistently say, when you try to create something on the planet that's never existed, a strong federal government, a national military, you know, things that just are not rooted in their past, and you think you can do that in the short term, 10 years, you know, and then you think you're going to leave. I mean, it's just, it's hard to comprehend that somebody could seriously say, yeah, let's commit American lives and the American and the treasury of the American people to this. And so I think that you've had so many attempts to get the, you know, and we say this about NATO on a regular basis. But why should the United States care more about your security than you do? So you've had Americans go to Afghanistan and die. You've had us attempt to train and support the Afghan government. At the end of the day, though, it will be up to the Afghans. Unless, you know, the American people want to stay in Afghanistan for 100 years and support that government. So at the end of the day, the Afghans will have the final say, right? As it should be. So anyway, I think that's just a matter of fact. And I think that we have a it'll be interesting to see what gets carved out relative to America's strategic interest, which you'll hear Tim Lynch, Jeff Kinney, and I talk about. And that is there any merit to when people say our strategic interest in the region is to keep organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS out of Afghanistan and to keep that from becoming a safe haven? Because if that's the rationale, then hell, there's a whole lot of countries around the world. So we'll you'll hear that. We'll kick that around next hour too. Is there any merit to that? Or simply saying, look, here's our calling card. You know who we are. Okay. Here's what we expect. This is what's in the deal. This will not happen here. If it does, we'll come back. And we're never again going to stay for very long. We're just going to come back and wreck the place. So what you'll hear in the first hour is you're going to hear Jack Keane talk, and you're going to hear what I would call voices from Afghanistan. And it's an Al Jazeera piece that runs about 24 minutes. And I find it really interesting, right? You know, everybody that you hear talk, there's no illusions about who the Taliban are or what they're going to bring. And there is great concern whether the Afghan nation as it exists today, apart from the Taliban, is strong enough to push back. You already saw the first piece of it was over the weekend. President Ghani said, we're not releasing, as a gesture, 5,000 people that we're holding. All that does is give them more fighters. If and when this thing comes apart, that will be the last thing that happens, if it happens. So so you'll hear from the Afghan people, and you'll hear the concern in their voices. So interesting stuff. So I, you know, again, far from a done deal, I would tell you, far from a done deal. Is the Afghan peace accord. The coronavirus thing all over the news. So let me get moving here, lest I get behind. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. After you're going to hear some audio, but after you hear it, you know, this is dedicated to the people of Afghanistan who've undergone 40 years of war. And honestly, I don't know if things are going to get better for them. I do not see the Taliban as a reasonable organization. I see, you know, And I've watched them in the past, and they can do anything and make any agreement to get the infidel out of their nation. And so if that in fact happens and a civil war ensues, it will be a sorry day for the Afghan people. So this is dedicated to the people of Afghanistan. Hopefully that good things are in the future for them. But when one side perceives the other as illegitimate and weak, that's not something that bodes well. So, with fingers crossed, right? This is dedicated to the people of Afghanistan, who certainly deserve to be able to live in peace.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
Come on, that never gets old.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check Marine weather. And then you're going to hear Jack Keane, and then you're going to hear people from Afghanistan. And then you're going to hear Tim Lynch and Jeff Kinney this morning on a special edition of, right, Hammerheads, Try to Be Smart Guys. Currently, mostly sunny at 51 in Quantico, sunny and 62 at Camp Lejeune, cloudy and 43 in 29 Palms, a little bit cooler weather yesterday in California, sunny and 46 at Camp Pendleton, Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy and 67. Okinawa's warmed up. Dark cloudy 62. Lashkar Gah has warmed up. Clear dark and 67 there. And in Ramadi, it has warmed up as well. So clear dark and 62 early in the evening at the corporate home of All Marine Radio. It is partly cloudy, 51 degrees. Looking for a high of 69 today, 73 tomorrow, and 67 on Wednesday. Shithole weather for you here on a Monday from Chris Cox in Massachusetts. He is on the move. His current position is Sterling, Massachusetts. Sent me a picture of Redemption Rock. Upon this rock, 50 feet west of this spot, Mary Rowlandson, wife of the first minister of Lancaster, was redeemed from captivity under King Philip. The narrative of her experience is one of the classics of colonial literature. And then there's a big rock. So congratulations to everybody. Current condition, 22 degrees, looking for a high of 50, mostly sunny skies, 25-mile-hour winds, steady with higher gusts. Buckle up, boys, on the slopes. Chris from Webster, out. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota. From Grand Forks and East Grand Forks, home of the 2020 NCHC Penrose Cup champions, the University of North Dakota, Fighting Hawks, not Fighting Sioux, Ruth Ann. Get with the program. Then she says, I just can't get there yet. Sunny early, clouds developing later. Looking for a high of 34. Breezy conditions through the day with winds out of the south-southwest at 17, gusting to 25. Light snow could develop in some areas later tonight, but just a dusting. Overnight low of 25, which is warm. And she's going to send me some pictures of, but they didn't show up, of the University of North Dakota getting it done. The hockey team from Bev in Saskatchewan. Good Monday morning from Churchbridge, Mac. Overcast skies and flurries are forecast to continue for the next 24 hours. Winds out of the southwest at 18, making the temperature of 21 feel like 7. This afternoon, winds will shift out of the west at 28 and a high of 34. So a nice day in Saskatchewan. All right. I want to play for you. A report from, this is General Jack Keane, and he's talking about the Afghan deal. John Bolton tweeted out, that this is an Obama-era deal, that in fact, that it legitimizes the Taliban and sends the wrong message to organizations like ISIS. And when I read that, like, so John, what are we supposed to do? Empty the treasury, send 300,000 soldiers and Marines over there and stay there for another 20 years? Is that what you want? And again, John Bolton was part of the group that thought going to Iraq was a good thing. So I think for people like John Bolton, first thing is when you have the urge to fight a war of opportunity, resist at all possible, you know, turns. Don't do it. If you have to do it, okay, if you have to do it, learn the lesson of Don Rumsfeld, right, which is committing the sins of Vietnam, the ghost of Robert McNamara reincarnate in Don Rumsfeld. You know, now he gets his data, right? He rips up the war plan. If you listen to your generals and you would have done what the war plan said, maybe you would have had a shot. But you have to go in overwhelming force. You have to crush it. And then maybe try to cast something in your wake. But that will take years, decades, not years, but decades. It will need the support of the United Nations. And if you don't have that, then you don't go. Wars of opportunity are a bad thing. All you have to do is look at American history. So anyway, this is General Jack Keane, formerly of the United States Army.
General Jack Keane, retired four-star general, joins us, chairman at the Institute for the Study of War and a Fox News senior strategic analyst. So, General, under the deal, U.S. troops will be withdrawn within 14 months if the Taliban meets specific goals, but you know that's a big if. Do you think this will work?
Well, the emphasis on the deal between the United States and the Taliban is just as you said. We're going to go down to 8,600 in 135 days, and then we'll take the rest of them out in 9.5 months and go to zero. And that's very specific with the timelines as you and I have just described. But what is not specific, what are the conditions upon which that withdrawal will be based? Are we to have a peace settlement that's enforceable and verifiable? That's not specified. All that's specified is we'll begin negotiations. Are we to have a ceasefire that has been sustained and is demonstratively successful because it's been a ceasefire for months? That's not specified. What is specified, Eric, is we'll begin negotiations to have a ceasefire. Are we to have human rights respected and the rights of women under the constitution of the government of Afghanistan has been fought so hard for all of these years? None of that is specified. So I think there's a lot more here that has to really be established, and the administration, I think, has got to educate the American people, and particularly the Congress, on what are some of the specifics that they're going to hold the Taliban to that are not in the deal.
And, I mean, do you think the Taliban will deliver? I mean, you were very concerned about the Taliban response to this announcement.
Yeah, well, I am. And let me just say something about President Ghani, who I've spoken to. Listen, to release 5,000 Taliban prisoners at the beginning of negotiations, as opposed to at the end of hostilities after you have a settlement, is somewhat outrageous. And he's got a right to be opposed to that. When it comes to the Taliban, we have said on this show, Eric, that what they want is U.S. withdrawal. They will say anything and do anything to achieve that. They will claim in victory right now. Here, let me read a statement to you from the media chief of the Taliban. In other words, the spokesperson for the Taliban, delivered from the hotel prior to the signing of the peace agreement, actually the day before the peace agreement is signed. Here's what he says. From here, the defeat of the arrogance of the White House in the face of the white turban will be announced. The white turban, of course, is the Taliban.
That doesn't sound like a partner in peace to me.
No, it does not. And that really is their true stripes there. Yeah. They want us out so they can have their way with it. They are going to use this opportunity to shore up their fighters who are weary and they're worn out. And that's why they don't want ceasefires, because a lot of those fighters will not come back to the battlefield. They'll use this to tell them, and they're already doing it, we've won a victory against the United States. So, yeah, we have a ways to go here, and I hope the administration comes forward and puts a little bit more specifics in how we're going to hold the Taliban accountable before we pull all our troops out.
But one critic of this is former Ambassador John Bolton, National Security Advisor. This is what he tweeted out. He said, quote, signing this agreement with the Taliban is an unacceptable risk to America's civilian population. This is an Obama-style deal. Legitimizing Taliban sends the wrong signal to ISIS and al-Qaeda terrorists and to America's enemies generally. And here is the president's response to Ambassador Bolton calling this an Obama-style deal.
Nobody should be criticizing this deal after 19 years. He had his chance. He didn't do it. He was very much in favor of going in. We should have never gone in the first place when they went into Iraq. Listen. When they went into Iraq, when they went into the Middle East in such a fashion, I was very much against it. Shouldn't have gone in. He thought we should have. That's been proven wrong. I'm surprised that anybody would be against something where we try and end a 19-year war.
So how can the president, do you think, or can this country and the Afghans hold the Taliban to account?
Yeah, I don't want to get between the president and Ambassador Bolton, certainly, but what I'm suggesting is that no one disputes the fact that trying to achieve a peace agreement in Afghanistan is a worthy objective. So applaud that intention and the people that are involved in that process. But we've got to be clear-eyed about it and not have the momentum to rush towards the exit like we did in Vietnam. And then 2 years later, we get a lousy answer. We've got time here to make certain that this deal is balanced. And certainly it protects the Constitution of Afghanistan, which has been in place now for 16 years, and also protects the national security interest, most important, Eric, of the United States to protect our homeland from al-Qaeda and from ISIS, who are operating inside of Afghanistan.
After all the blood and treasure of our country that we've given to that country, we certainly hope that was not and will not be in vain. And that at some point peace will come and the Taliban will live up to their duties, but we'll have to see. General Jack Keane, good to see you. Thank you.
Good talking to you.
Of course. All right, that is Jack Keane. You can see that he's you know, what to, again, to coin, to use Grant Newsham's terms, cautiously pessimistic. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear a segment from Al Jazeera, and where they go ahead and they talk to different representatives from different sectors of Afghanistan, a female who used to be in their Congress, if you will, and a couple of academics. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, on a Monday, we continue. I'm a fan of listening to Al Jazeera. Now, a lot of people don't like him, but I do. If you're not listening to the people that, right, that you're embroiled in conflict with, and you don't know their voices, and you don't hear them, then you're not very smart, all right? There's a piece I want to play also later in the week about the Iranians. The Iranians went to polls in record low numbers in spite being told by their Ayatollah that it was their religious duty to do so. Yeah. And so, to me, right, and along with a lot of smart people, well, you don't even have to be very smart, that is a sign that they're losing faith. Right, so voter turnout in the Iranian polls was the lowest since the revolution in 1979. Right, and again, everybody was urged to cast their ballots as a religious duty and a show of resistance in the face of U.S. sanctions. Not buying it. So 6,000 to 7,000 candidates were eliminated in that election. And conservatives will have an even greater hand in their parliament. So I want to play that for you later. Pretty interesting little thing. All right. So the question is, in this piece that was done on Al Jazeera, is peace finally coming to Afghanistan? So give this a listen. It'll kind of set the stage for listening to Tim and Jeff and I talk in the next segment. So smart on Afghanistan today.
Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nick Clark. It is being called the first step towards lasting peace in Afghanistan. The United States and the Afghan Taliban have signed a preliminary deal towards ending nearly two decades of war. It's a result of 18 months of talks here in Doha in Qatar. The first stage involves the exchange of 6,000 prisoners and what's called a meaningful reduction of violence over the next 135 days. The US and NATO will withdraw all troops within 14 months if the Taliban upholds its commitments. It's hoped all this will lead to direct talks between the Taliban and the Afghan government in Kabul, which the Taliban has refused to recognize.
So these are the things that are maddening that you hear about in this agreement, right? Right? As General Keane said, a very strict timeline for American withdrawal. And it didn't call for the Taliban to recognize the legitimacy of the Afghan government. It didn't call for release of prisoners at the end of these peace talks and peace negotiations. And so, you know, like deals with China. You can have a deal with China anytime you want to. You just got to get on your knees, right? And so, you know, you look at this deal, and this is as good as we could do. And so, you know, it's a head scratcher at times.
We're just at the beginning.
Mike Pompeo.
The cause of peace will require serious work and sacrifice by all sides. The United States, the coalition, the Taliban, the Afghan government, other Afghan leaders, and the Afghan people themselves, to maintain the momentum needed to reach a comprehensive, inclusive, and durable peace.
Well, tens of thousands of people have been killed since the U.S.-led invasion began in 2001. Hoda Abdul Hamid has been looking at how people in Afghanistan feel about the agreement.
It's a momentous time for Afghanistan. Many still in disbelief that what had been unthinkable is happening. The U.S. and the Taliban agreeing with each other. Mohammad Aziz is upbeat. This has been the most peaceful week Kabul has seen in years.
We can go out of our homes without any fear of anything.
So it's been a good week?
Yeah. The agreement is between the American and Taliban. But it will be have lots of effects on Afghan people, because the security of Afghanistan is in the hand of the Americans.
But outside of Kabul in Jabal Siraj, Shukr Muhammad wonders about his future. He has mixed feelings. The Taliban ruled here before, so he knows them well.
It's bad. If the Taliban come back, I won't be able to run my business. They forbid music. I will have to leave the country. For the past 40 years, foreigners didn't let us live in peace. That's why the country is in this situation. It's maybe better if they leave, but there will be no peace with the Taliban. It will be worse. I'm scared.
The war has been devastating for Bibi Gul. Her husband, a soldier in the National Army, was killed in a suicide attack in her home province of Lahman. Then another four members of her family died in another attack. Being a widow with seven children is tough. They help out by polishing shoes on the streets or begging in the market.
We've never had any help from anyone. It's a miserable life. My sons collect trash so we can burn it in the stove. The foreigners must stay. I haven't seen anything good from the government. And the Taliban destroyed our lives. It's because of them that we became beggars. It's humiliating. Only the foreigners can help us.
The Taliban controls nearly half of the country, mainly rural areas where most of the war against American troops unfolded. People have been told that they will fully withdraw soon, and there's a sense of victory.
People are happy. We also want peace and security. Taliban are committed to their promise. The fighters obey whatever orders they get.
This guy's from Wardak province on the eastern side of Afghanistan.
This is a big success for us.
Back in the city, Zainab Mayer is worried. She was born as a refugee in Iran. Now she's a university student, part of a new generation full of aspirations.
Everybody knows that Taliban's, their ideas, like how limited and close-minded they are. And if they come to the government, like officially, they can implement their limitations. Officially, they can implement, and the people that will be hurt is the women. Because Taliban, I'm never good with women. I don't know. the people working in the government or officials, they do not have peace between themselves. And I don't think if they're going to have peace with someone else like Taliban.
Wardak province is on the eastern third of Afghanistan, just west of Kabul, so kind of east central, right? You heard the voices of that woman though, right? And you will hear that consistently throughout this report.
If all goes well, the U.S. will pull out its troops. The Taliban and Afghan leaders might find a compromise, but many Afghans remain cautious about the future. They've seen many false dawns before. Hud Abdul Hamid, Al Jazeera, Kabul.
Well, ahead of the signing, the Taliban assured Al Jazeera that women's rights will be preserved on one condition.
Women want that to have their right to education and their right to work. We both accept and give them as per the Islamic rules, but only that they observe the hijab, only that.
All right, let's bring in our guest now. From Kabul, we're joined by Habib Wardak, who's a national security analyst and lecturer at Cardan University. Also standing by for us in Kabul in Afghanistan, we have Fawzia Koofi, who's a former member of the Afghanistan Parliament and chairperson of Afghanistan's Women, Civil Society and Human Rights Commission. And from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Bharath Gopalaswamy, who's a distinguished senior fellow with the Observer Research Foundation. Welcome to you all. Fawzia Koofi, I'd like to start with you, if I may. You have lived through the time of the Taliban when they took over Afghanistan in the 1990s and when they banished women from public life. You faced them as a politician in negotiations. How hopeful are you at this moment that we're heading towards peace and a peace that's acceptable to all?
Well, we in Afghanistan are cautiously optimistic and hopeful. I'm saying cautiously because the people of Afghanistan, the political community, the civil society, and people from across walks of life are fed up with the four decades of war, which Afghans have paid the major price for it. In the meantime, this is the hope. If this war ends and if peace with dignity and justice prevails in Afghanistan, I think this is what people of Afghanistan expect and desire and deserve. In the meantime, we are cautious because given the Taliban regime and their especially attitudes towards civic rights and particularly for women's rights, we are concerned, we are worried that probably some of the gains we have had in the past 18 years with all the problems, it is not a perfect situation. I'm not claiming that women of Afghanistan enjoy all the freedoms, but of course nothing to compare with the Taliban regime. So we are worried that some of the gains we have had in the past 18 years probably will be compromised. This was the reason I actually participated, to ensure that women's rights are not a matter of compromise with the cost of peace.
Okay, well, we'll come on to that more in a little bit. But first, Habib Wardak, a peace of dignity and justice, says Fawzia. Four decades of war and distrust. How do you overcome that?
Well, the way I look at it personally, when you have about 300 to 250 to 300 coffins being sent out to Afghan families across the country, be it in rural Afghanistan or urban Afghanistan, these civic rights are most of the time come across very cosmetic because they happen to be in urban Afghanistan. My personal conviction is that once these rivers of blood finally stops, everything can be worked to, be it women rights, be it civic rights, be it freedom of speech. But first and the foremost important thing is that this river of blood needs to stop. It happened after 18 years, should have happened way earlier, but it's still better than nothing. Today, all of the Afghans across the country, be it rural Afghanistan or urban Afghanistan, are very optimistic about it. nobody is denying it, that the crucial, complex, intra-Afghan dialogue stage is yet to come, and we are yet to overcome that to ensure a sustainable, long-term ceasefire and then subsequently peace in Afghanistan. But we are all very optimistic about it.
Right, that's the thing, isn't it, Bharath? Because the potential for this to falter is significant, not least because the Afghan government itself is at odds with itself.
We use the term cautiously pessimistic, and you're going to see all the different layers of it.
Well, I mean, I think the first and foremost was the intra-Afghan dialogue, which we said. And, we're going to we've strongly encouraged, we meaning the U.S. has strongly encouraged to have come to a peaceful resolution on what the intra-Afghan dialogue must look like. And all these months through the negotiations, that was one of the major sticking points. And finally, where we reached with that, with the Taliban, and suddenly we have divisions among the Afghan political elite about what that government might look like and who is the government in charge that the Taliban will need to engage with and talk to. Ironically, all we see now is that the Taliban is a consistent partner and not the Afghan government in that sense. So the constant pressure from the Afghan people, the Afghan society, the civil society, the international pressure, the regional pressure must be kept with these Afghan political actors so that they come on the same page to have a discussion, so that I'm sure they're tired too, but they must overcome their differences out here. And as my previous colleague put it, for the bloodshed to stop, that is mm-hmm. that is imperative. And that is the pressure that we must all build on the Afghan political elite.
Interesting, as they talk about the inter-Afghan dialogue, right, which the Taliban said, look, we don't recognize him as legitimate, blah, 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 blah. So there's a problem there. Then the second problem that you don't hear as much about is the infighting inside of the Afghan federal political system. Right, they don't see the last election as legitimate, and somebody's going to form their own government and whatnot. So now, that group, in some way, shape, or form, got to get its shit together, right, to sit down with the Taliban, and make no mistake about it, this is going to be about money and power, who controlled both.
Fawzia, when you hear the Taliban say, and we heard it earlier on this program, when you hear the Taliban say that there will be education, there will be jobs for women, but under Islamic rules and with the hijab, what does that indicate to you about what's coming?
Well, firstly, let me clarify that the call for inclusivity, the call for freedom, the call for liberty in Afghanistan is not limited to urban cities. It's across Afghanistan. I travel across Afghanistan. I have been to the villages. I am a village woman. Everywhere you go, probably the demand is different, but every human being, and particularly women, no matter where they live, they now want to have a life where their daughters could go to school, they could benefit the freedom that people in other parts of the world enjoy that. But this term of within Islamic values is a very broad term. Mm-hmm. We are an Islamic country, and women of Afghanistan never demanded so far anything beyond Islamic values. But there is a different interpretation of Islamic values as we have experienced that. During Taliban, there was a different interpretation of Islamic values. In the parliament, in the daily basis, I faced some of these male members of parliament who try to have their own interpretation of Islam within the Islamic call it Islamic value. So therefore, I think we have to really clarify that. And that's why the intra-Afghan dialogue or the intra-Afghan talks are crucial, because you really have to clarify a lot of issues that people of Afghanistan are worried about. We have to really agree upon the way forward of what will a peace government look like. We have to really clarify, what does it mean to say Islamic education of women or Islamic working condition for women. We have to agree upon all of those details, because we don't want history to repeat itself. We remember when during 90s, the international community had discussions with Mujahideen. There was no woman involved. There was no civil society. There was no people from Afghanistan. As a result, civil war occurred in Afghanistan, and we paid the, you know, that the Afghan people paid the major price. You have been in Kabul. But this is something we want to avoid. Beginning of, after the fall of Taliban regime, there was talks about peace and justice. And then many people said, well, let's prioritize peace, as justice might be become so politicized. At the end of the day, now, we don't have peace and there is no justice. I think this has to go parallel. Yes, we are working for peace because we strive for peace because that is what people of Afghanistan deserve. And in fact, when I personally attend some of these dialogues, my own daughters ask me this question, why do you attend when they are killing our people? And my answer is exactly for the same reason that I want to attend these talks to stop this bloodshed and killing of Afghan right. people. But there should be a cost. We cannot compromise all the gains for the sake of peace.
Okay, Habib Wardak, we're talking about power sharing here. Can power be shared? What kind of power sharing deal would the Taliban accept, and indeed the Afghan government? And what shape would it take?
So that's very much forward thinking. My sort of question will be, how do we get to find a consensus and then come across each other at the intra-Afghan negotiations? Whenever I have been talking to members of the Taliban delegation in Doha or the Afghan government in Kabul or the civil society, what I have told them that the future structure of Afghanistan does not really matter for as long as it's based on consensus. When the Afghans come together, they form a consensus. Now, it could be called an Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. It could be called a Republic of Afghanistan. But for as long as it's based on consensus, where all Afghans, that we're talking about different tribes, we're talking about the inclusion of women, we're talking about civil society, we're talking about the religions, the sects that we have in terms of Sunnis and the Shias, for as long as all of them come together, agree on a framework.
Right, but let me just interrupt. Forgive me for interrupting.
Yeah, this is where the cautiously pessimistic piece comes in. Man, who sees that? Right? If they, does the Taliban have any interest in that? I see no indication, right? I've seen no indication. And when I hear this, what I fear is that, you know, is that, it's just, this is just going to lead to a greater civil war in Afghanistan.
It's very easy to say that, isn't it? Because consensus, as we all know, means agreement. And for example, when the Taliban leader Baradar says he wants an Islamic regime for Afghanistan, what does he mean by that, Habib? And is it something that would be acceptable to the rest of Afghanistan?
Interestingly, Mullah Baradar said the same thing in the joint declaration that came out today, which was signed by Ambassador Khalilzad and Mullah Baradar himself, that right. also indicated at something called the post-settlement Islamic government of Afghanistan. I think what the Taliban wants is that they want a thorough review to the Afghan constitution. And based on that, forming a government. They have their reservations, and amendments to the constitution will only happen once you have the Taliban, the Afghan government, the political elites come together. Not necessarily in a form of emirate, but they have their reservations about the constitution. It's still early to sort of bluff about it as of what is it exactly that they want. They have not yet themselves gone into details as of what exactly they want. We still have about 2 weeks for the intra-Afghan dialogue. There are still about a few little things to be done, which includes the release of about 5,000 prisoners of Taliban by the Afghan government and about 1,000 prisoners of the Afghan side with the Taliban. So include this gets you a tally of about 6,000 prisoners in total that needs to be released before March 10th, March 9th, so that we can get into the intra-Afghan dialogue.
Okay,
just to remind you, President Ghani said he's not releasing 5,000 people.
I'm going to jump in because I need to take it on. I'm sorry, Habib, because we've got a lot to cover. I just need to bring in Barath. Barath, if the Taliban are part of the government, is your sense that they would try and impose their strict agenda again?
Well, I mean, you know, if they're part of the government, why will they want to be part of a government if their part of the agenda is not covered? Mm-hmm. The reason we are in this place in the first situation is because they want to be part of the government. They are a fabric of the Afghan society. And they want to be part of, they want to impose their agenda. They want to have a, let's put it in business terms. They want to be an operational partner. They believe that they want a seat at the table. They want to impose how this, and they have ideas about, their own ideas about how the country is to be run. Yes, they're willing to accept a compromise. They're willing to work out a deal. That's why we're in the first place. I think that's where it is. And I think going back to some of what my colleagues have been saying, I think the first and foremost, my immediate tactical problem that I see is where do the Ghani faction and the Abdullah faction lie? I think that they have to come on the same page before we start about an all-Afghan dialogue. I think that's you're going to see those problems surfacing. And getting all these actors on the same page is what you're going to see as in terms of in the next 2 weeks. My first colleague remarked that we're cautiously optimistic, and she's right to be cautiously optimistic because these political elites, do they put their political interests first, they put their power interests first, or they put the Afghan interests first is the first question that I would ask.
The Ghani and Abdullah, right, those are the two rivals for the current government of Afghanistan, right, for the presidency. Now, Ghani won. A review of the vote said that he won. Abdullah said, no, I don't accept that, and I'll form my own separate government. So that's who that is.
Yeah, and the thing is, Bharatha, the Taliban are in a strong position because they control more territory now than they have done at any point since 2001, don't they?
Yes, statistically speaking, and by going by the reports, that's what we read, that's what we assess, and that's what we understand, and that's what all the evidence and indicators point out to. They control more territory. I mean, at the end of the day, we are, like, the U.S. policy was not negotiating with the Taliban, but we are negotiating with the Taliban today. So, you know, there is a if those indicators are right, then that's where we've arrived at. We know that that's where the problem is, and that's why we are talking to them.
Fawzi, do you want to come in there? Do you think people in Afghanistan trust the Taliban?
There is a huge trust deficit. It's true. And the trust deficit comes from the experience that people had during Taliban. And then also, it continues to happen up to now. Probably the ones that are in Doha, the political negotiation team, their perspective on some of the issues that people of Afghanistan are worried about are different. My concern is how do we reintegrate those who are actually fighting on the ground? A lot of them are uneducated. I have been part of reintegration of ex-child soldiers in the past, and I know that this will be a major operation to safely reintegrate those who actually only have seen a gun as a means of survival. So there is a huge task ahead of us. I think now it's time in Afghanistan internally to create a consensus politically, because this united political community in Afghanistan will put Afghanistan, Republic of Afghanistan, in a weaker position. And I think it's time for the political leaders, the two election campaign camps, to come together to put a strong negotiation team forward, and then to look ahead, because, you know, we have suffered, and it's time for us to get together.
And do you think this could be the moment that, that Ghani and Abdullah do unite and pull together because of this?
It is not easy. It is a very divided society. We know that peace unites and election divides. We are in the midst of both. We just had an election. It is disputed. We had a national unity government, which was not really successful. So we really have to look at all aspects. And my call to the political leaders, and we have been trying, a group of women actually have been trying to also meet with these political leaders inside Afghanistan to see how we can bring unity, because it's not just peace with Taliban. We really have to have peace among ourselves and unity and look ahead, because this country has paid a lot for war. It is, and this is because of wrong politics of our leaders. The country deserves a better politician, better politics.
Bharath, I'm going to end with you. Why do you think the Taliban have been amenable to get as far as we have today when all efforts have failed in the past? What's sweetened the deal for them this time round?
Well, I mean, I think the Taliban, one of the reasons is where my colleague also left. I'll begin from there. One of the domestic political consensus, the corruption in the government, the endemic endemic corruption amongst the political elite and the division and, you know, confusion, incoherence, and at many levels, incompetence as well. So these have contributed on the political level. The other end of it is also the U.S. Many of the policy choices and the war fighting tactics where the Taliban have shown they've been on the military level, they've shown that they're more successful. At the end of the day, U.S. is fighting 8,000 miles away from a land where it does not fully understand the terrain. The third thing that's largely uncovered is the role of regional actors out here. If you notice Secretary Pompeo speaking, he attributed a lot of he gave credit to the Pakistanis. They've had their share of role in Pakistan has had a part to play. Russia has had a part to play. Iran has had a part to play. And the U.S. interests vis-a-vis these countries, their U.S. interests with Russia, U.S. interests with Iran, and U.S. interests with Pakistan have contributed to the Taliban's success. So, you know, that's where that's perhaps where Taliban has come out ahead in this whole scenario.
Right. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds in the crucial weeks, months, and indeed years ahead. Thank you.
So there you have it from Afghanistan, you know, voices. And again, much skepticism, obviously, with much skepticism because of the Taliban's past record. And, you know, and how does this go forward? So anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney will join me. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.